Welcome to the Taming Tribulation Podcast. I am your host, Wyatt Hammond.
And I'm your co-host, Jeremy Crossley.
In Season 2, we are using biblical stories about trials and tribulations that characters have gone through, how they confronted them and overcame their own personal obstacles, so they can become the people that God uses for His purpose. Not perfect people, but imperfect people being used to do His will.
Our intention with these stories is to pass on to the listener the understanding that God uses the hardest and most difficult moments in our lives to refine us into the people we were meant to be.
We hope that you can be encouraged to see where God can use your tribulations for His purpose. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Taming Tribulation. In this episode, Jeremy and I are going to be covering 2 Samuel chapter 13 to 14. And quick, we're going to do a episode recap of the last one and where we ended. In our last episode, Jeremy and I finished off at 2 Samuel chapter 12, where at this point in the story, David has stolen Uriah's wife, Bathsheba, sent Uriah to war and killed him, taken Bathsheba's wife as his own, had a son with her. God has killed that son as a punishment to David. God has given David another son named Jedidiah. And we're at the point of the story where now David has gone back off to war. And it seems like, okay, after all of those horrible things David has done, God has given him his punishment. And now we're moving on to other parts of the story. What has happened is now in the past, and we're moving on to bigger and better things. So now in this episode, Jeremy and I are going to be moving on to chapter 13 and 14. I'll give you a bit of a warning to the listener that this story has some scenes of sexual abuse in it. Welcome to the Bible if you've never read it before. There's lots of that, lots of messed up people doing messed up things, and this is precisely what that story is. So this will not be a particularly joyful part of the story. It's another dark part of David's family story, and that is why we're reading it, because these are the types of people that God uses to do His work. So, starting in chapter 13 of 2 Samuel, in the course of time, Amnon, son of David, fell in love with Tamar, the beautiful sister of Absalom, son of David. So, stop here and just explain to the listener that all of these characters, Amnon, Tamar, and Absalom, are all offspring of David. And continuing on in verse 2, Amnon became so obsessed with his sister Tamar that he made himself ill. She was a virgin, and it seemed impossible for him to do anything to her. Now Amnon had an advisor named Jonadab, son of Shimeah, David's brother. Jonadab was a very shrewd man. He asked Amnon, "Why do you, the king's son, look so haggard morning after morning? Won't you tell me?" So I'm going to stop here and just address to the listener again what a messed up part of the story this is, because all of these characters are offspring of David. Amnon wants to rape his sister, who's a virgin. So he's so distressed about how he can't sleep with his sister that he speaks to his advisor named Jonadab, David's brother. So this is her own uncle that's telling his nephew how to rape his niece. That's how messed up this story is.
Yeah. And lesson learned from anyone listening to this is have a good advisor who has good advice, not bad advice.
Yes. Absolutely. And maybe not your uncle, maybe not your family member, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So moving on, Amnon said to him, "I'm in love with Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. Go to bed and pretend to be ill," Jonadab said. "When your father comes to see you, say to him, 'I would like my sister Tamar to come and give me something to eat. Let her prepare the food in my sight so I may watch her and then eat it from her hand.'" So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. When the king came to see him, Amnon said to him, "I would like my sister Tamar to come and make some special bread in my sight so I may eat from her hand." David sent word to Tamar at the palace, "Go to the house of your brother Amnon and prepare some food for him." So Tamar went to the house of her brother Amnon, who was lying down. She took some dough and kneaded it, made the bread in his sight and baked it. Then she took the pan and served him the bread, but he refused to eat. "Send everyone out of here," Amnon said. So everyone left him. Then Amnon said to Tamar, "Bring the food here into my bedroom so I may eat it from your hand." And Tamar took the bread she prepared and brought it to her brother Amnon in his bedroom. But when she took it to him to eat, he grabbed her and said, "Come to bed with me, my sister." "No, my brother," she said to him, "don't force me. Such a thing should not be done in Israel. Don't do this wicked thing. What about me? Where could I get rid of my disgrace? And what about you? You would be like one of the wicked fools in Israel. Please speak to the king. He will not keep me from being married to you." But he refused to listen to her, and since he was stronger than she, he raped her. Then Amnon hated her with an intense hatred. In fact, he hated her more than he had loved her. Amnon said to her, "Get up and get out." "No," she said to him, "sending me away would be a greater wrong than what you have already done to me." But he refused to listen to her. He called his personal servant and said, "Get this woman out of my sight and bolt the door after her." So his servant put her out and bolted the door after her. She was wearing an ornate robe, for this was the kind of garment the virgin daughters of the king wore. Tamar put ashes on her head and tore the ornate robe she was wearing. She put her hands on her head and went away, weeping aloud as she went. Her brother Absalom said to her, "Has that Amnon your brother been with you? Be quiet for now, my sister. He is your brother. Don't take this thing to heart." And Tamar lived in her brother Absalom's house, a desolate woman. When King David heard all this, he was furious. And Absalom never said a word to Amnon, either good or bad. He hated Amnon because he had disgraced his sister Tamar. Okay, so we're at the point of the story where David is king. He has all these children with different women, and now his children are doing horrible things to each other. So Amnon rapes his sister Tamar by lying, pretending to be ill, getting his sister to come and help, which adds just another level of viciousness to the story, that you're not even just going to be evil enough to go do the thing that you want to do, but you're going to trick the victim into actually helping you before you rape them. Then in classic male fashion, he gets what he wants and sends her away and bolts the door behind her. And now she goes to her other brother, Absalom, and shares her disgrace. He takes care of her, and she's now living in Absalom's house for several years while Absalom is clearly planning vengeance on Amnon. So what comes out to you in this story, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think the main point is trying to understand the mentality of the uncle. That's the first thing that kind of jumped out to me was, like, why would an uncle go out of his way to tell his nephew, "Hey, this is how you can essentially solve your urges"? And it's just wild to me why he probably did it. I mean, I can only think of one way, is to get back at David. You know, I remember when David was chosen, the brothers were still, you know, furious with him being the one king of Israel, the one that was chosen by Nathaniel. And I can just only imagine them just trying to get back at him for the rest of their lives. And, like, I understand, like, people have, I guess, the urge, but, like, this is Israel. They didn't, like, around the world, they did stuff like this, right? People know plenty of stories like ancient Egypt where they kept the bloodline pure, for example, but this was obviously not the way, for multiple reasons. But he did it anyways. And what was really sad to me is that Tamar, like, ripped off her clothes and put ashes on her head to kind of, like, degrade who she was. Like, that's essentially what they did in Israel. The reason why they did that is to essentially, like, that's their way of, like, repentance, right? To, like, show to God that they're worth nothing. So then they put ashes on their head. And to me, I'm just sitting here just, like, really feeling sorry and sad for her, because this is not something she was willing to do. She said, no, it would disgrace everybody, it would disgrace you and all Israel. And he rapes her, but then what does she do? She goes and does that. And it's, I don't know, I just think it's really sad to see her immediate response is to defile herself. And it's not something she voluntarily did. It was something that was forced on her. I don't know. That's my thought on that. I think it's really, really sad. And then I'm surprised she went to another brother to actually talk about it. You know what I mean? Like, I can imagine her just not being able to trust anyone after that. But yeah.
So just to your point about how she felt and that how she must have felt about herself after she was abused that way, and that in verse 20 when Absalom, her brother, says, her brother Absalom said to her, "Has that Amnon, your brother, been with you? Be quiet for now, my sister. He is your brother. Don't take this thing to heart." So that's kind of him saying, this doesn't mean you're less than nothing, right? That was his deed, not yours.
Yes.
And you're still just as valuable as you were before.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people can relate on that aspect too, not just for situations they were put in when they didn't voluntarily get put in those situations. You know what I mean? A lot of people can feel, I mean, it happens to victims all the time. They feel like they're worthy and they're less than, and it's just like, this isn't you that did it. This is sin. This is mankind that did this to you. You know, forgive yourself. Like, this isn't something you did. So it's tough. Yeah.
Very good point. Okay. So moving on to verse 23, Absalom kills Amnon. 2 years later, when Absalom's sheep herders were at Baal Hazor near the border of Ephraim, he invited all the king's sons to come there. Absalom went to the king and said, "Your servant has had shearers come. Will the king and his attendants please join me?" "No, my son," the king replied. "All of us should not go. We should only be a burden to you." Although Absalom urged him, he still refused to go, but gave him his blessing. Then Absalom said, "If not, please let my brother Amnon come with us." The king asked, "Why should he go with you?" But Absalom urged him, so he sent him with Amnon and the rest of the king's sons. Absalom ordered his men, "Listen, when Amnon is in high spirits from drinking wine, and I say to you, strike Amnon down, then kill him. Don't be afraid. Haven't I given you this order? Be strong and brave." So Absalom's men did to Amnon what Absalom had ordered. Then all the king's sons got up, mounted their mules, and fled. When they were on the way, the report came to David. Absalom has struck down all the king's sons. Not one of them is left. The king stood up, tore his clothes, and lay down on the ground, and all of his attendants stood by with their clothes torn. But Jonadab, son of Shimeah, David's brother, said, "My lord should not think that they killed all the princes. Only Amnon is dead. This has been Absalom's express intention ever since the day Amnon raped his sister Tamar. My lord the king should not be concerned about the report that the king's sons are dead. Only Amnon is dead." Meanwhile, Absalom had fled. Now the man standing watch looked up and saw many people on the road west of him coming down the side of the hill. The watchman went and told the king, "I see men in the direction of Horonaim on the side of the hill." Jonadab said to the king, "See, the king's sons have come. It has happened just as your servant said." As he finished speaking, the king's sons came in, wailing loudly. The king too and all his attendants wept very bitterly. Absalom fled and went to Talmai, son of Ammihud, the king of Geshur. But King David mourned many days for his son. After Absalom fled and went to Geshur, he stayed there after 3 years. And King David longed to go to Absalom, for he was consoled concerning Amnon's death. So what do you think about Absalom killing his brother, Jeremy?
I understand why he would do such a thing. Obviously, I don't agree. It's tough. It is tough. I mean, we think as humans, on a non-spiritual aspect of it, that eye for an eye type of thing, right? And I mean, I can imagine a lot of people living that way, right? An eye for an eye. Obviously, it's not what we're called to do, but it's tough being that guy. I don't pass judgment on anybody. It's tough being that guy, being a witness to something like that, something heinous like that happening to one of us, and not knowing how to react or respond. But this is definitely planned out. I mean, he waited a couple of years to act this out. So I'm just surprised he showed up. I'm surprised he wasn't put in jail. I'm surprised King David didn't do anything about that either. It's confusing. Obviously, we don't have the entire context of it, but yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, my human side says, of course, he did the right thing. Of course, Absalom should have murdered his brother who raped his sister, and that's the right form of justice. The more biblically savvy side of me knows what's coming and realizes that normally when people take the finality of trying to exact vengeance on their own, it's rarely turns out the way that they think it will. And the ending is not normally as sweet as they think it will be when they get vengeance on the person that they wanted to. So it's when we continue on in this story right now, the decision he made feels right in the time of, in the moment, you know, I'm sure he's, Absalom is thinking, okay, well, he, you know, Amnon did this horrible thing to my sister. There's got to be consequences, and there won't be consequences from anyone else. So I have to be the judge and executioner.
Yeah. Took it upon himself.
Yeah. And that is almost always the wrong answer. There's a wiser judge than all of us. And even if we think that we know what the worst criminal on earth deserves, if we're placing judgment on them, there's going to be just as much judgment placed on us.
Yeah.
And so be careful how you judge people, right? Like in these moments, yeah, feels right. What feels right is rarely the right thing. So for David, seeing his children do these things to each other, who do you think he's more upset with? Jeremy, is he more upset with Amnon or Absalom?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think he's definitely going to be, this is definitely going to be a learning moment for Absalom. I could almost predict that David's going to rebuke the crap out of him. But I don't know. To me, it's just so surprising because Amnon, like, I just don't know why David didn't take action. I mean, action in the way of like imprisoning him or like banishing him, not killing him, but because we just learned right now is like if we take consequences into our own hands, we'll know like it's not going to go well. So maybe that could have been David's mentality, you know? Maybe David could have been like, I'm going to let like God settle this, right? I mean, something was allowed to happen in that situation, but it's tough. I think Absalom's going to get a nice rebuking. He'll learn some stuff, but I don't know. I'd be kind of scared. I'd be kind of scared to come home and have to deal with the consequences to my father. But I guess we'll see. We'll have to see.
Yeah. And the truth is, I mean, when you look at when you weigh these crimes out, right, it is a horrible, despicable crime to rape anybody, and especially your sister. I mean, you can't think of many things worse. But is murder worse than rape? Right? Like if you're going to try to exact vengeance on somebody and now you commit a worse crime, now you're the one that is the criminal, right? And now the first criminal is the victim. Like, so it's like when somebody does something terrible to you and you feel like you're the wronged, okay, that's a horrible feeling. But now you do something way worse to that person for vengeance, and see after you do that if the feeling of being the person that has exacted vengeance and now being the criminal in that story, see if that feels better than being the victim. When it doesn't, right? When you have the choice to let somebody, I mean, obviously there's specific stories that, and there's limits to all of this, but when you treat somebody poorly or when somebody treats you poorly, I feel worse when I treat somebody poorly than when somebody treats me poorly, because that means that person is the one in pain, right? And I can choose how I'll react. But mm-hmm. if I decide to lash back out at them and get vengeance, then you're the only one in the wrong at the end of that story. So that's kind of where we're ending here, is like, yes, Amnon did a horrible thing and there would be just judgment for that and he would get what's coming to him. But yeah. Absalom decided to take that on his own and now he's a murderer. So before he was the good guy, he was the guy that took care of his sister when she needed help and decided I'm not the final executioner, but instead at the end of the story, he's the murderer. He's the one on the run. Amnon's dead. And now he's the one that has to go back and apologize to the rest of his family and repent from that. Like, so that's another part of the story is just what consequences we can expect when we're the ones that decide that to be the final judge and never turns out well.
Yeah. And I think another important part to highlight as well is just because we can sit here and say rape and murder is bad. Like there are a whole bunch of different other different examples. Like if someone literally swears at you, calls you a name, hits you, like what if then you hit them back and then it starts a fight? And I always use an example of people. It's like, say you've been hit, right? And you hit them back and they trip and they hurt themselves to where either they're in a coma or they die, because there are a lot of incidences where there's, you know, negligent homicide. And people are in jail for the next 10 years because they got into a bar fight because they hit someone once and they hit their head on a curb and they're, you know, they, so it's like, it's a call for action, but it's a call for action to not do an eye for an eye. But yeah, if they slap you on the left side of your face, turn to them the right. And if you retaliate with vengeance, then they're going to expect it. But if you give them kindness, that's something people don't ever expect. And it changes their thought. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like killing them with kindness. And if society thinks that this is what I've done my entire life and this is how everyone has responded, then I'm going to expect that. But imagine if someone responded a whole different way than what you expected. Like, what do you do about it? You know what I mean? Imagine you telling, it's funny. One of my buddies had a story where his son did something he knew was really wrong. And he was so furious with him. He like knife handed him and he was like, what are you doing? Like, obviously it's not the best thing, but his son turned to him. And instead of saying like, I didn't mean to, his son said, Daddy, have grace on me. And my buddy essentially just like broke down and cried, like teared up a little bit. Cause he's like, it hit him right in the feels. He's like, you know, you're right. You're not wrong. So he immediately like stopped and he just looked at it and he was just like, and he, his son had tears in his eyes and everything, but he didn't expect that response. He didn't expect an excuse. And then he just stopped and he stopped yelling and he gave him a hug and he apologized. And I think that response is something that calls us higher to do. And anybody else listening to this, like, it's so much easier to react the way you think society says you should react, but it's so much harder to respond in the way that we're called to respond. And that's with anything that is considered negligent or bad in society, not just murder and rape. I'm talking someone hits your car, someone cuts you off in traffic, someone calls you a name, someone disrespects you in front of other people. Like, the right thing to do is not to react, but to respond as righteous and godly with grace and compassion with them or to them, you know? And it's, yeah, that's just the thing that came out of my heart with this is like, and when you do react, consequences, right? It's not gonna be good. So
yeah,
it's simply a call for action.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that's a great place to end this one off. And in the next episode, we will continue on with Absalom's story and we'll find out what the consequences of his actions are. Thanks for listening to Taming Tribulation, everybody. Have a great week.